Today, on this episode of the PureDirect Special Spotlight.
I think targeted therapy in non-small cell lung cancer has been one of the best innovations over the past several years in this field. And I can't overstate the importance of having a target available for your patient when they have progression of disease on first-line therapy.
Today, Drs. Roto and Cooper join the podcast to discuss evolving second-line strategies in HER2-positive lung cancer in this PureDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Julia Roto. I'm a medical oncologist and the clinical director of the Lowe Center for Thoracic Oncology at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. I'm also an assistant professor of medicine at the Harvard Medical School.
And I'm Dr. Alyssa Cooper. I'm also a medical oncologist at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute here in Boston, Massachusetts, and I'm on faculty at Harvard Medical School.
Thanks for joining us. Today in this discussion, we'll focus on the role of HER2 as a target in non-small cell lung cancer, with particular attention to how the treatment landscape is changing in the second-line setting. Ready to get started, Alyssa?
Absolutely, Julia.
So, Alyssa, when you see a patient with HER2-positive non-small cell lung cancer who's moving beyond first-line therapy, how do you frame the importance of having targeted approaches available?
I think targeted therapy in non-small cell lung cancer has been one of the best innovations over the past several years in this field. And I can't overstate the importance of having a target available for your patient when they have progression of disease on first-line therapy. I think when I'm thinking about treating patients in the later line setting, I'm often reaching for clinical trials, and some of those clinical trials are targeting novel targets, which don't have approved agents yet. Now that we have approved agents in this space for patients with HER2 mutations, I think this is, I can't overstate how exciting it is for our patients to have efficacious therapies that are available for us to prescribe.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. When I think about what's changed outcomes in non-small cell lung cancer, certainly advent of screening's been important, immunotherapy's been important, but the ability to do personalized therapy guided by biomarker testing has really been critical to improve outcomes for our patients.
Julia, how are you approaching HER2 testing? I think a lot of oncologists in the community wrestle with the difference between mutation, amplification, and overexpression, and they don't all mean the same thing when it comes to treatment.
Yeah, this really is an important topic. I think as our biomarker-driven options have become more extensive, testing has become more complex as well, and we move beyond simply genomic-based testing to also genomic and IHC-based testing in non-small cell lung cancer. So for HER2 specifically, there are really three different ways the gene or the protein can be abnormal in the disease. The most common one that we think of often is HER2 mutations, and these are found typically on next-generation sequencing, so NGS-based testing. We're looking for activating HER2 mutations. But there are other forms of alterations. You can find HER2 amplification, which is excess copies of the HER2 gene. You might find that by accident on NGS, where sometimes that's reported, or by FISH, so that's sent less commonly in non-small cell lung cancer. It's often still available on commercial panels where it's included with other testing. And then third, you can look for HER2 protein overexpression, and that's found via IHC, where the biomarker in non-small cell lung cancer is a HER2 IHC 3+ status. And these all drive us different ways in terms of treatment options in the second line and later setting. So mutations can drive you towards a HER2 TKI like zongertinib or a HER2 antibody drug conjugate like trastuzumab deruxtecan, whereas HER2 overexpression would drive you towards an antibody drug conjugate based therapy. So they do have implications for practice, and they're not fully mutually exclusive. So it's really important to test all patients for each of these biomarkers.
I'll just highlight something you said, which is that now we have approval for trastuzumab deruxtecan in the tumor agnostic setting for IHC 3+ for solid tumors. And so that does include non-small cell lung cancer. It is interesting to think about what should we do with our patients who, for example, demonstrate IHC 2+. Could we potentially offer trastuzumab deruxtecan in that patient population? It's a little bit tempting, but I think it's currently controversial.
Yeah, I'd agree. Right now, we don't have an FDA approval for use in the 2+ setting. It hasn't made its way into the guidelines. There's a little bit of data in the clinical trials originally where they looked at both outcomes in 2+ positive and 3+ positive, and efficacy was better in those higher expressors, 3+. So my own practice, I'm not reaching it for it right now in these lower expressing patients, though it is tempting when you see it come back. So second-line treatment options have been fairly limited, but we just talked about there are some newer HER2-targeted agents that are now available. A little more detail now, how are you thinking about these evolving options and their role in HER2-positive patients with lung cancer?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I think the first really exciting advance was trastuzumab deruxtecan, which is an antibody drug conjugate targeting HER2 mutations, as you just reviewed. I think this was a very exciting presentation when it was first explored a couple of years ago with response rates in the mid-50% range for this patient population was really very exciting. Trastuzumab deruxtecan does have a very specific toxicity profile. It does have the risk of interstitial lung disease, which is something we definitely need to keep an eye out for, and it's something to always consider if your patient has pulmonary comorbidities or potentially even baseline interstitial lung disease. You would potentially not consider that therapy in that patient population, but still was a very exciting advance. And then just over the past year or so, we've actually had the advent of really efficacious HER2-targeted targeted therapies, tyrosine kinase inhibitors. Previously, there had been some tyrosine kinase inhibitors, which had been tried to be used for patients with HER2 mutations, but had not been very efficacious and had actually been quite toxic. And in the clinical trials of those agents, most patients had to discontinue the therapy, and the response rates were still quite low. So the advent of these really efficacious and quite minimally toxic agents, such as zongertinib and savobertinib, are the two that have been most recently presented, has been really very exciting. And of note, in the presentation of zongertinib, they noted that there really was no high-grade interstitial lung disease or pneumonitis, which is something that's really important because we had only had trastuzumab deruxtecan to use for patients before. And perhaps if your patient is at high risk for that, you really wouldn't want to choose that therapy. So having targeted therapies without overlapping risk profiles, I think, is really just a key consideration here.
Yeah, we look back even just a few years, HER2 was the target we would find, but we didn't have any effective therapies. And like you said, we reached for agents off-label, like older HER2 ADCs, wild-type HER2 TKIs, these really early generations of HER2 TKIs with really very minimal activity or really excess toxicity. So exciting to be in a world now where we're talking about multiple different HER2-directed therapies being available.
Julia, not every patient is the same when they reach second line. How do you decide which agent to use based on patient characteristics? For example, younger versus older patients, comorbidities, prior toxicities, or how aggressively the disease is behaving?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think really we're going to be in a scenario where as we get into second line setting after, say, chemotherapy-based therapies, treatments, we're going to have to make a decision with our patients. And I do think it's going to be a space where we'll be presenting both options to our patients and engaging in shared decision-making, both in terms of logistics of therapy, what we know about efficacy, and what we know about toxicity profile. And I will say, as you cited, I do think the HER2 TKIs have some advantage there. They have a longer progression-free survival doing cross-trial comparisons, and I think a little gentler toxicity profile in general when you're getting away from the cytotoxic component of antibody-drug conjugates. So I do expect that a lot of us, myself, and I think likely you included, would reach for a TKI before you reach for an ADC for our patients with HER2 mutant lung cancer. I will say, though, that there's never been a direct head-to-head comparison of these two treatment strategies, so both would be very reasonable to reach for. I think emerging data, hopefully in the future, will also let us know, is there a differential efficacy depending on the order that these are sequenced? Does one drive greater or lesser efficacy of the next line agent? So we may find in the future that there's an optimal order of operations here in terms of which agent goes first to optimize our patient's long-term benefit from therapy. But I think more study is needed in that space. So speaking of the future, Alyssa, I'm interested in what's on your radar for the future of HER2-positive cancer, whether it's agents in the pipeline or better biomarker strategies. Where do you see the field going in the next few years?
Yeah, it's hard to exactly predict given the last couple of years have really seen meteoric advancements in this space. And I think we couldn't have predicted based on the performance of the, as you were saying, the first generation, older generation, wild-type HER2 TKIs. We could not have predicted the advent of a drug that was so efficacious and so tolerable. So I think that has been extremely exciting for our patients and as a clinician. I think one of the main things that really the whole field of non-small cell lung cancer has been moving towards is the understanding of escalation versus de-escalation of care. You know, are there patients for whom clinical characteristics or molecular characteristics really drive the need for combination therapies, for example, perhaps needing to combine a TKI or ADC with other agents like standard chemotherapies or immunotherapies or potentially other molecular mechanisms that haven't even been discovered yet. So I think, you know, the field is wide open in terms of understanding exactly what is going to be the best personalized therapy for each particular patient, whether it's combination therapies, sequencing strategies, as you've said. And really, I think uptake really needs to be emphasized here. You know, the word needs to be out that these therapies are available. This biomarker needs to be looked for. You know, I think awareness is there for our oncogenes such as EGFR and ALK, but even uptake for testing for them is not perfect across the country. So I think, you know, the more outreach and awareness we can do to make sure that this is a biomarker that's looked for so that these therapies can be used is really important.
I absolutely agree. Alyssa, this has been great. Thanks for joining me today. And thank you for joining us for our discussion on the evolving second-line strategies in HER2-positive non-small cell lung cancer.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PureDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PureDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PureDirect.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, or TuneIn. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my Flash Briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Roto and Cooper. Join me next time for another episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.